Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. Today's guest goes without exception. She's a successful entrepreneur. She's been a multi-unit franchise owner. She's an investor with entrepreneurs and startups. She hosts her own show called Free Agent and is a franchise consultant with one of the top franchise consulting firms in Franchoice, Meg Schmitz. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nick. I've been excited to come on and have this conversation with you.
Well, so many folks don't necessarily have the clearest understanding of what franchising is. I think in so many situations, people think of companies like Burger King or McDonald's and don't necessarily understand that franchising comes in many different forms and business types. And to that end, a lot of people don't necessarily raise their hand and say, I'm going to go into franchising or study franchising in college. In many cases, franchising has a way of finding you. So Meg, how did franchising find you?
Great start to the conversation. I'm glad that you led through that thought process there. My husband and I do a lot of investing, and life is certainly different now than when I first got started 30 years ago. Franchising has a whole different perception now than it did back then. And the perception back then really came from my family. Talk about negative vibes when, now my husband at the time, and that's a big distinguisher here because my current one, we invest completely differently, different mindset than when I was previously married. But my husband then had gone to a franchise expo in the Chicago area, and he came home and said, well, people got to eat. And if you have a car, you need it to get to work. And you know what? Everybody's got hair. So let's do this Great Clips thing. And I said, what? I didn't know that you were looking to get into business ownership. We had a two-year-old. It was actually one at the time. And so how did franchising find me? It was my husband who went to this franchise expo. But it leads perfectly, Nick, into the three pillars that are my current pillars and how I work with my current candidates. Because what he didn't really pay attention to, his wife, our life, and our money, those are my three pillars. You cannot ignore your wife, your lifestyle, and your money. You should not be making business investment and own outright, be the boss of a business that you don't really understand. So he made a pretty cavalier decision to jump in. And that's how franchising found me, is he signed a franchise agreement with Great Clips. Thank God it was Great Clips, because it's a world-class gold standard franchising even way back then. And that's really how I cut my teeth in the world of business ownership, was with a company that absolutely knew how to train their franchisees to be successful owners. Now, my husband wasn't a great fit for that, but I'm absolutely a perfect prototype for a franchise owner.
So it sounds like you ultimately were running the franchise businesses.
Yeah, about 6 months after we got open, realized that we were losing, bleeding to death. And he just said, you know what, lock up the doors, throw away the keys. I've had it with this. I don't get it. I don't understand our employees. And I'm too much of a terrier to let something go like that. I needed to figure it out. And so we did figure out that one of our employees was stealing. We had other shenanigans, drug dealing out of the back room. So who jumped in and solved it? Yes, that was me.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the differences and just the characteristic traits between you and your husband that, at least for Great Clips, made you a great owner versus your husband?
To this day is very much a shiny, sparkly, ooh, look at that. Oh, over here. But the thing about franchising, and you know this too, as a franchisor, is not every body and not every person or personality is the right type of owner, not a good cultural fit, not fill in the blank. There's something about it or that person that makes them not an ideal owner. And back then, Great Clips was willing to, because they were coming to Chicago and they were going to go big or go home. And so they were really on the hunt for people who could write a check and sign. But it takes more than that to be a good owner. I, on the other hand, am not a fixer and a changer and a shiny, sparkly thing. Give me a good recipe and you're going to get a great outcome. So he's not a great fit for franchising. He's too entrepreneurial and wants to tweak and tune. For me, life is short. I don't want to recreate the wheel. So that's the difference between the two of us.
Yeah. Executing on the model. Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? It was a game changer in very short order. Because once I identified the person who was stealing and got rid of the problems, the cockroaches in the back room, my other employees came up to me and said, "What took you so long? But thank you for doing it. Now we've got a clean slate. And oh, by the way, I'd really like to volunteer to take over scheduling, or I'd like to volunteer to take over inventory." So I had great people below the manager and the assistant manager, but it takes confidence to get rid of your quote unquote top people. But then that's where you really see where the cream rises. And after that, we were following the system and running like clockwork.
Yeah, that's incredible how making those team changes, all of a sudden, people start falling into the seats where they belong, and even more so, stepping up to the plate and taking initiative. And oftentimes for a first-time business owner, that's one of the hardest things to do, is to make the people changes that need to be made in the organization in a timely fashion. All too many times, those decisions get drug out. And for obvious reasons, it hurts cash flow, it hurts morale, hurts performance of the team. And all of a sudden you make those tough choices, which are really smart business choices. And things seem to start falling into place a lot easier. They still don't fall into place by themselves, but you most certainly have the support in helping you do that. My goodness, that's all too common. And I'm glad that you ultimately, as that terrier, got into the driver's seat and you were in the right seat. So did you guys have multiple locations, or was it just a single location?
Back then, you could only start with a single location. There was no such thing as a three territory or three unit, five unit, et cetera. So we had a single location, and then we could pony up and sign up for another location and write the check for that license. So we started off with just a single location. For that particular business model, a single location wasn't going to throw off enough income, profit for either one, my husband or for me, to leave our job. So we did end up actually buying a second location from someone down the road who was out of operational standards. They were on probation, given the opportunity to cure their problems. And so I was able to step in and buy it for pennies on the dollar. Then we bought another license after that. And so we did start off only being able to buy one, but as things progressed, we're able to expand into more locations.
And clearly you didn't have that plan up front, right? Hey, we're going to own multiple locations.
It became clear that that's the only way in that particular model that you're going to create something of value, of wealth, create an exitable model, open enough that someone would want to buy them. And so the twist on this too, Nick, is that at unit number three, my husband had been saying for a long time that this wasn't working out. He wasn't happy, never should have gotten married. He's 13 years older than I am. And there were some discrepancies there that weren't going to get fixed. So after the third unit opened, that was my exit strategy. No alimony, no child support. Here, you take them. I don't like this business anyway. It was his statement on the way out. It's like, that's kind of funny because he's the one who chose Great Clips and got us in. But I was happy to take those three and build it to five locations. And then someone made me an offer, an existing Great Clips owner made me an offer I couldn't refuse. And that's when I exited Great Clips and jumped the fence over to consulting.
So you had mentioned that multi-unit franchise ownership from day one didn't exist back then. And now it does, right? So it's not uncommon to have franchise partner purchase two territories, three. You could even purchase 10. It's not unusual for the right situation. And so to that point, Megan, and having experience on your end, opening up to five territories and successfully exiting them, you know, what tips do you have for somebody that is considering multiple units, and what advice do you have in that situation?
I think it's very much human nature that when you get in, could equate it, say, to getting married and deciding to have kids. You're not going to have a litter of 8 puppies. You're not going to outright go and adopt. Some people do, a family of 3 or 5 kids. And so I think the mindset going in is, okay, we're going to open one at a time. But what I love about the current model, where you can acquire multiple licenses all at once, is that that ties up your insurance program for you. That's a territory now that's locked in. The zip codes are identified. The radius around the locations of the brick and mortar are identified. And that gives you a trade area that you can build into. So you can leverage your employee base. You can leverage infrastructure, marketing, goodwill, all the things that come from a well-run business. So the real advantage for the person looking to build wealth is to build into a multi-unit mindset from the beginning. You don't have to open them all at once, but build into that wealth-building mindset from the beginning. And that's what will give you a sizable asset that at some point you either continue to operate because it's a cash-making machine, or someone will make you an offer and it'll be a lucrative exit. It needs to look like your brand. It needs to operate like your brand, right? There are some parameters around what makes it valuable. But if you go in with that exit in mind, then you will get there faster. There are other people, though, and you see it with your own brand, who you think it's a good fit and they're starting off fine and they're struggling for whatever reason. And ultimately, it ends up not being the right fit. And the nicest thing any of us can do at that point is to say, okay, let's part. This isn't working out. And then move on and find an owner who will be more suitable for that brand, that concept, and that culture than maybe the one who's not the right fit. And that's, I say that based on my ex-husband and me.
I love how you said start with the mindset right from the beginning. I think there's something so invaluable about that statement. And I didn't expect you to say that, but so much of performance is mindset and creating that vision, that why, that ultimately leads to you executing and making that a reality. But tying up the territories right from the beginning is paramount, especially with a brand that's growing fast. You know that territories are being awarded. If it's prime territory and it's the territory that you want, that is clearly a huge advantage for you locking up that territory right from the get-go and doing that with the right mindset. Speaking of mindset, Meg, you went from 1 unit to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5. You made that decision 5 times. And I think that really speaks to your mindset. What were some of those mindset items that were going through your mind as you were expanding your empire?
Okay, these are really good points. When you start with one, and with a model like Great Clips, I had 12 to 15 employees per location. And with one, when you start to see the quality of the people who are banner waving brand loyalists, and they're starting to rise up. If you only have one location, at some point, you can only have one manager, 2 assistant managers, how many shift managers. But as people want to move up, I needed to expand because I had great people who had aspirations financially. Mostly these are women who are parents who had kids. They wanted to demonstrate. I can think of a handful of my employees who wanted to show their family, husband, and their kids. This is what your mom can do. I had to look ahead. And I interviewed people for my own podcast who have said, come on, let's face it. Once you get past one and you start to build that inner infrastructure and you know who's responsible, now you need to start leveraging that infrastructure or they're going to go, they're going to leave. So it's much easier actually with economies of scale, 2, 3, 5, however many units that is. And I'm working with a gentleman down in Nashville who's up to 13 or 15 brick and mortar. And he'll tell you all day long, it's so much easier to run this business now than it was with his first one. And I completely agree with that.
Why do you think that is?
It's because you have quality people who are waving their hand and saying, I can do more. I have more capacity than just what I'm doing. Would you let me do this? Would you let me do that? Can I help you find a new location? Can I help you staff, interview, fill in the blank? You need to acknowledge your quality people by giving them opportunity to grow.
Do you think vision has a part of that? You cast a vision big enough that can fit your teammates' visions in it as well, and they want to step in, take more initiative.
I advocate for this now with my candidates who are going through the validation process to evaluate whether they're going to buy their own franchise. If you don't do it, you're going to lose your people. So my learning lesson, Nick, back then is that I better get my butt in gear and get my money organized so that I can get that second, that third location, or my best people are either going to go to the competition or they're going to go to a different Great Clips owner. And I was not willing, after that first story I was telling you about my manager who was stealing, when you identify really good people, keep with them, find ways to keep them, promote them, and give them income opportunities. Love them up. Love them better than anybody else out there is going to love them, and they won't leave. It doesn't cost you a lot to do that, but you have to give them the types of opportunities that resonate with them so that they will stay.
Love them up. I appreciate that. Yeah, business is so much about just that, people. And that's what business is. It's all about people and the relationships. Your ability as a business owner to build those authentic and genuine relationships with your team and then turn that into empowering them and giving them direction and showing them the next step to leveling up. They love it, right? People love to know that they work for an organization where they can make a difference, where they can have an impact, where they know they're winning. And the vision is big enough to fit their vision, their dreams. And you hit it on the head there in saying their income goals, right? They clearly want to level up from an income standpoint. Yes, there's fulfillment around the position and making a difference and the relationships with management, ownership, the team, but obviously are making a living and creating that atmosphere for people doesn't come naturally per se, right? It's a skill. And sure, that skill may come more naturally to some than others, but regardless, it is most certainly intentional. And so providing your team with that roadmap and getting good at creating that roadmap is obviously paramount for a multi-unit owner, being able to create that environment for your team to grow with you and ultimately be empowered and entrusted with helping you in your mission, your cause there within your empire. So Meg, you had mentioned this is going to seem pretty straightforward, but I think from a franchise owner standpoint, it's invaluable. You'd mentioned love them up. What do you mean by that?
Oh, love them up. This is so easy. And the reason that's such an important thing, Nick, you hear it with your owners, and I certainly felt it as an owner with Great Clips. There's a turnstile. You got people coming, you got people going. And what is that life cycle of your employee? You have direct control over that. So when I got into Great Clips, the life cycle of a stylist was anywhere from 6 months to 2 years. But you could pretty much count on total turnover with great regularity. And I was not willing to tolerate that cycle. It's way too much effort. It's too much money too, to have to onboard and then lose people. So one of the things that I share with my current franchise owners as a key to hanging on to people, I used to do this with every employee. I got out an index card. It's so old school. I got out an index card and I had my employee write down their name, kids' names, ages, birth date, marriage, yes, husband's name, anniversary, favorite pack of smokes, favorite cola drink, favorite flower, candy bar, you name it. You think about the things that if you could leave it for them and say, you know what, Linda, I was thinking about you today. I know you're going through a rough patch. Here's a sunflower and a Milky Way. And you would think, yeah. It's that simple. How much does that cost? So you keep your little file system of what are those little tidbits of love, and that's how you love them up. And by the way, that 6 months to 2 years, when I sold my five units after whatever it was, 11 and a half, 12 years of ownership, more than half my staff had been with me for 8 years or longer. Love them up.
Yeah. Who would have thought, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so paramount. I feel like you spend so much time in your profession at work and you want to enjoy it. And so many times it's a struggle to get the week started. It's a struggle to show up each day. But having those relationships and knowing that people have your back, again, business is all about people and relationships. And if you know that the folks next to you have your back, and you have theirs, it's so much more fulfilling showing up every Monday, showing up every day when it's beyond just yourself and you know you're winning and you're making a difference. There's only so many things that you need, and that's the combination there. But it seems so difficult to do when you look at business ownership, right? There's varying success when it comes to this point, which is investing in your people from a relational standpoint, but giving them the roadmap to make more income. I'm sure they didn't stick with you for all those years because they were barely making bills, right? They were being empowered and making more income.
And being taught how to be a better self-representative. I'm really good at what I do. Hey, you know what? I gave you that flat top haircut. The only way, kid, you're going to get it to stand up straight is if you go home with this wax. So I can give you the haircut today, but if you want it to look like this next week, here's the stuff I'm putting in. You should buy some before you go home. This is not only empowering my employee to think differently, make a recommendation. You're not selling something. You're making a recommendation that will enhance your tip. It'll enhance your income because now you're selling products as well. So I was spending a lot of effort also educating them, my employees, on how they could increase their income. Yeah, it was a big piece of how I ended up with that kind of retention. Another example I would give you and your listeners is when you take the pyramid and at the top is yourself, at the very pinnacle, it's you. That's really not the whole purpose of owning a business. But if you take that pyramid and turn it upside down and all your employees, your frontline people are top of mind and you take care of them, then everything else will come down through the funnel and you're the beneficiary of your employees having a great culture, to your point, wanting to come in every week, every day. You can help them put their game face on and do their best. That was so empowering for me to learn as a corporate refugee, because I had a full-time job until the third location, and then I could create enough money, income, that I could walk away. That was a big paradigm shift to start thinking like my employees and how I could educate them to make more and do better. But it started with putting them first at the top and knowing that the happier they were, the more profitable my business would become.
You said it, the upside down pyramid. It's gold. You heard it here from a successful five unit franchise owner who successfully exited, right? Have that upside down pyramid mentality. Meg, I didn't realize we were going to go here today. Being so relationally focused, business is clearly a people business, and how you treat your team clearly creates success so that you can replicate it over your first, second, third, and beyond units. It's gold. So thanks for that, Meg. I really appreciate it. Kind of put a cap on that with the upside down pyramid. Remember, upside down pyramid, frontline workers at the top. It's not top down. That does not make sense. Just think about it in your everyday life. It's not the way to grow a business. And if that's your approach, top down, you're probably only going to get into that first unit and really struggle from that point. So Meg, you are currently a franchise consultant with Franchoice, and you help matchmake, you help people identify the right opportunities in this vast world of franchise opportunities, right? People have these aspirations of entrepreneurship. They want to be in business for themselves, but not by themselves. They understand the value, the power in the franchise model. You mentioned Great Clips having tremendous training. You know, there's so much support and technology and marketing, everything that goes into that partnership between a franchisor and a franchisee that a franchise owner can capitalize on. If you wouldn't mind taking us through your process, what organization, this is one thing that you're great at, is bringing organization to discovery process, navigating the world of opportunities. What does that organization look like that you bring to this exploration process of trying to find the right franchise fit if I'm a prospective franchise owner?
So one of my first principles is work with the willing. If people are too entrepreneurial, and I would have told Great Clips this about my ex-husband, he was too far over on, I want to do it my way. I want to fix this. I don't think you're looking at this the right way. A franchise, you know this, and I've started some myself. You start with this first location and you're sorting out what works and what doesn't. And then you get to duplicate that. Well, that worked. Now you're going to replicate that broadly. Well, now you're really creating an internal structure, operations, hiring, marketing, everything that goes into building that business. Overlay that onto what does a franchisor want? They want someone who's going to follow that process. They want someone who's going to follow and execute the recipe. If you want a German chocolate cake, follow the recipe. Don't try to make it up from scratch. You want to deliver a happy end result. So the process that I use is first, let's talk about why are we having this conversation? Why will owning a business change your life? Why will your wife, your life, and your money all benefit from this decision? So before I go any further, I do a first exploratory phone call or Zoom meeting with someone to find out why are we having this conversation and what is the outcome that they're looking for. I'm looking for something that is sticky in their personality or in their skill sets. They've done things. This is not just so sick of my boss and the economy is terrible or I need to make more money. Just give me a little side hustle. They need to know that this is a long-term strategy and that they have been able to stick with something like learning a musical instrument, playing on a team sport. I want to see that they've got personality traits that make them stick with it, because we all know that like a marriage, raising kids, you're going to have a challenge. You're going to have lots of challenges. So I'm looking for specific personality traits before we ever get into the consultation. Once we get there, now we're really fleshing out all the different layers of management style and preference and how much of this is ego-driven. Whatever I do, it's got to be a pretty business versus doing a dirty job. Some people really don't care. Every step along the way, I'm reminding them that you, the franchisor, is looking for a week-over-week logical progression of, is this the right fit or isn't it? So I'm looking for key traits because I've been a franchisor, a franchise investor, or franchisee. I'm looking for all those sticky points. And if along the way I think that it's not going to work, then I have no problem saying, no, this is not going to work. I don't think this is the right fit for you. Who can I introduce you to help you get where you really want to go? But if it's really working out, you know, and so do I. You can start to hear it in their voice. You can see it in their face. So I'm looking for week over week logical progression towards a yes or no decision, hopefully a yes, that will find that right fit. I'm willing to work with a candidate no matter how long it takes. By the way, I really only work with referrals or people who have intelligently found me. I don't buy leads, but I'm looking for people who really have that curiosity. Then when you get to yes, it's a pretty momentous outcome when you're happy, Nick, my person is happy, my referring party is happy, then I can be happy.
I would have expected you to say something along the lines of, we have this step and that step. And sure, I'm pretty positive you have that logical progression, but ultimately you're catering to the specific person. And again, going back to business being so relational, there's clearly a huge component of reading and understanding that, hey, somebody is continuing, this individual is taking, matching me step for step as we are progressing through this process. And ultimately, you know, we're getting more and more concrete and confident in the yes, right? If there are steps going back, okay, now we need to reevaluate this and make sure that this is still right for your wife, your money, and your lifestyle, right? Those are the three, your wife, lifestyle, and your money. And clearly, if you get there and that isn't adding up, there's not a process that necessarily tells you that. That's the relationship that you've developed with that individual.
And so to be clear, I do have a week over week, 6 to 8 week process. At certain points, I will insert different introductions, like for financing. You want to have your FDD reviewed. Do we bring in a franchise attorney, or how do you get your FDD related questions answered? Then you get to validation. I'm a franchisee as well. So I go through this periodic investigation myself. So I know what it's like to sit in the saddle of somebody who's riding this horse. There is a logical progression that the franchisor will take a candidate through. I'm there each step along the way to open up my knowledge base and my introductions so that my candidate can intelligently ask the appropriate questions week in, week out, looking for expected outcomes that will support this investment decision as a yes. But it's a process of building and layering. This is my process, their decision. This is my process, their timeline. And I do have to be respectful for spring break, illness. Gosh, we've had a lot of disruptions here over the last few years. Fear. What's going on with the economy, interest rates? Is this a good time to invest? Ultimately, I have a 6 to 8 week process, but sometimes it needs to go longer or shorter because this is the candidate's decision, not mine.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that, Meg. So it's great to have a finite amount of time, right? You clearly know that there is a decision being made here that aligns with your spouse, your finances, your lifestyle, that full combination as you're going through the process. And I'm sure that that starts to give you indicators of, okay, can this person follow a process?
That's what you're looking for, right? Sure.
Yes.
Because we've got somebody in motion right now. And every step along the way, I'm looking to my candidate to follow the outline that has been given to him by line painting, which may be exactly the same as another company. It might be quite a bit different from another company. And that also, for me, goes into the selection of different companies I'm going to present to that candidate, that he or she is the one who needs to satisfy his or her own curiosity. Is this, because nobody gets into business to lose money, is this going to be a capital gain for me? How quickly? Because there's a financial piece of this, but there's also the culture and the leadership and the camaraderie. And some of those things take all the way to meet the team day before you can really see the right fit. You've probably had people at meet the team that you thought, yeah, this person is going to be a yes. And all of a sudden you go, oh, didn't see that one coming. Now it's a no. So it's a matter of working with the candidate with the particular brand and helping that candidate get through the brand's process. Because in the end, you're the one as the owner of line painting who's got to be happy with your mix of franchise owners.
Well said. My gosh, they are demonstrating the ability to follow the brand's process throughout even the discovery process. They're not even a franchise owner yet, and they're being evaluated for following the process. You know, we just had a candidate at last month's decision day, and his dilemma was, I really need to make sure that I will follow this process and that I can make the decision to get out of my own way and commit to that, because that's clearly going to be how I am successful, right? And so sometimes you don't even know, even when you're at decision day, but that is clearly the end all,
yeah.
Right? And going back to your Great Clips days of you and your husband, the difference there, ex-husband, the difference there was, hey, look, bright, shiny object and executing on the process. It's so paramount in franchising to follow the system, follow the process. So Meg, I'm curious, are there some talents and interests? Is there a way that you go about evaluating them in successfully pairing a candidate with a brand? How are you evaluating somebody's skills, their interests, their talents, and how you are introducing them to potential brands?
Fortunate for me, I've been in an ownership role for more than 30 years. So I've been in the world of franchising for 31, 32 years. So I know what I have been successful doing, the lessons that I've learned from these different companies too. My benefit is that I've been with FranChoice for 20 and a half years, which means I've been to 40 something conferences every 6 months. I get to know you. I get to know the founder and visionary. I get to know the brand president. I get to know the development people who instill upon us every 6 months, what are those success traits? What does a successful owner look like? Tell me something about your brand, a pivot, something that is unique to your brand. So I can go back to my candidate and evaluate with him or her what their preferences, strengths, and weaknesses are, and match them with what I know about my portfolio companies. Sometimes it gets down to really splitting hairs, and there are so many good options that I have right now, it's sometimes hard to know how to whittle it down. So what I say to my candidate is, if I gave you every option that I think is a good fit for you, you'd be drinking from a fire hose and we'd get nowhere. So let's agree that behind, you've got a whiteboard back there. We're going to put up brand one, brand two, brand three. Now we're going to compare and contrast. And as you learn factually what works for you, then I can start to not twist, but go back through and filter through my own knowledge base. Maybe that one wasn't the right fit, but based on what he or she learned, and I can go back to the well and bring different brands in. So for me, the biggest benefit is just the amount of time that I've been with the company and the level of, I would say, intimate knowledge that is exchanged amongst us when we're at our conference every 6 months. That really helps me to dial into the granularity, because this isn't just about writing a check. And that's what my ex-husband did. He wrote a check for a gold standard brand, and they didn't have a contextual understanding of each other. That's what I'm trying to get at, is that contextual understanding of what will be successful on both sides.
Yeah, well said. And clearly from experience, right, you're pulling this matchmaking process from many years of experience. And I love that. If you were to go to just some skills in general, Meg, what do you think makes you so great with people? Throughout this conversation, I think that stands out pretty clear that you're great with people. And so what are some characteristics about yourself that you think translate and make it easier for you to work with people so well?
I lean in and I listen. There's a time for me to speak, but there's a time for my candidate. And who doesn't like to talk about themselves? So I'm asking them, why are we having this conversation? I'm taking copious notes. My husband will tell me, you don't remember where you left the car keys, but you don't ever forget anything about a candidate you're working with. And that's true because I'm looking for that emotional, psychological connection. That's my degree, is in counseling. How do you help somebody get better? How do you help somebody get to an end result that's going to make them happy? Listen to what they're telling you, but then also have the discernment or the discretion to understand when you haven't gotten to those raw nerves yet, and they're still kind of hiding, they're still not quite telling you everything you need to know. That's again why I go back to the three pillars, your wife, your life, and your money, because the spouse will be a truth teller. No, we're not going to do this. I'm totally afraid. We're not getting anywhere on this one until we get blah, 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 blah. So it's a matter of trust building between the decision maker or decision makers, myself and the franchisor, you, so that it's a three-legged stool and everything that needs to be transparent is there, because ultimately this is a big decision, but it's such an impactful, meaningful decision. I need my people to trust me to be their Sherpa through the Himalayas where it's dangerous and come out the other side with success in their reach.
Yeah, I commend you, Meg. And you've clearly been so committed to the franchise world and have led with your best foot forward. And that's been starting with the upside down pyramid, right? And taking that approach now in what you do in matchmaking, putting the brand first, putting the candidate first. It's the brand's process. It's the candidate's three pillars that you've mentioned. And there's so much service that you lead with. I can see why you're so valuable to folks that are looking for a franchise opportunity. So Meg, I want to transition here. You've had the opportunity to invest in so many entrepreneurs and startups. What are you looking for when you partner with an entrepreneur or a startup as an investor?
So I'm big on analogies. The one that stands out the most for my husband and me as we're doing our angel investments and we're mentoring a lot of new entrepreneurs, there are two things in this analogy. There's the jockey and there's the horse. The horse is the concept. The jockey is the one that's going to get that thoroughbred over the finish line. So sometimes you have an amazing opportunity, and I invested in one a number of years ago. Amazing opportunity, global opportunity. Saw the big picture. What Pete and I miss is the jockey was a friggin' idiot. He was a shyster. And while he cleaned up good, you could put him on that horse and he looked good, he did not have the capability to actually run that company successfully. So I hope that analogy makes sense to people. You can get also just a pretty mediocre concept, but a great jockey who can read the horse. I just finished a book called Horse. And this is exactly what she was writing about, is you can get a great horse, but a bad jockey is going to screw it up. You can get an okay or really good idea, and a jockey who really gets the world of franchising. You're true to your mission. You've got your mission, Lime, and you're true to the owners who are coming before this new crop that you're bringing in. So you, Nick, you're the jockey on the horse and getting it over the finish line successfully. That's the combination I'm looking for. And it's not equal parts of this or that. There's some chemistry in there. Timing, market conditions, differentiators. There were a lot of different elements that go into it, but those are my primary two.
The jockey and the horse. Yeah. And again, it goes back to having intuition and being able to read situations and be intuitive about the economic and market conditions. It's again, a people business, right? And you're even taking that approach in your angel investments. Would you mind sharing some investments that have gone well and maybe some that have not?
So at this point, we've got about 120, 125 in our portfolio. that we've invested in. My husband is the one who really is the driver on this. He comes from the world of trading. He used to work in Chicago Board of Trade, where very physical back then. You can take the man off the floor, but you cannot take the trader out of the man. And that's what he continues to do. So he's very comfortable in high risk investments. Some of those play out well and some of those don't play out so well. And we've had some epics on either end of the spectrum with that, but most of them do fall in the middle. And he and I collectively, with the CEO of that particular company that we own, we're all working with that entrepreneur to help groom him or her as they're navigating the different aspects of their own trajectory. And let's face it, the last 3 years have been kind of crazy. So Pete's very comfortable in financial technology. We're not so comfortable, say, in medical device, but we've hit it nicely with a couple of exits in some medical devices that actually turned out to be a good investment. In the pandemic, there were a lot that just struggled so much, and it doesn't even matter what industry they were in. I can tell you by comparison, my franchise portfolio has been entirely successful and has stood the test of time. But many entrepreneurs don't have a clear pathway. They're not critical thinkers. They have their own protectiveness. And you know this, you start a concept, you're kind of protective about what you're growing. And some people are very willing to let outsiders in and others not so much. So sometimes it's a read on the investor and are they willing to take critical advice? That's when we back away, is if that person is so protective of their concept that they're not going to be willing to listen to critical feedback about how to make it a marketable, monetizable option.
That piece there, and I can see why franchising would consistently be successful. The community that is made up in a franchise, it's a huge competitive advantage. In COVID, that was something that our franchise community really leaned in on and expressed to one another, was our gratitude for the community that we had, looking on the other side of the fence, realizing that, oh my gosh, and empathizing, having so much compassion for folks that didn't have that community. We most certainly benefited from that and recognized it in that time. So Meg, you have a podcast and it's one of my favorite titles and you're the host. It's The Free Agent. How did you come up with that name?
I used to do a lot of presentations to outplacement offices where I was meeting with executives who were out the door. The revolving door, the turnstile had kicked them out, and they were coming to listen to alternative investment strategies, is how I presented franchising. This is a diversification or an alternative investment strategy. I remember looking at a group, one particular meeting, there were probably 12 or 15 people, fairly small group. And each one of you, if you think about a professional athlete, they get to the end of their contract, they still have gas in the tank. They still have desire for the game. They're still a winner inside, but now you're a free agent. That's good and that's bad. It's uncomfortable. And that now you don't have the locker room, the camaraderie, you don't have the stadium to go to, you don't have the trainers, the training facility, you don't have the structure. Now you got to do it yourself. So how are you going to differentiate yourself and get picked for another team unless you stay sharp? So I want you to think about yourself now as a free agent. There's a ton of competition out there. How are you going to level up and make yourself the desirable hiring option, or in franchising, make yourself that desirable next business owner? And a lot of them really, I can use a lot of analogies. I can see eyes growing and smiles coming on the face. And that's when I thought, that's the name, because people resonate, that title, that name resonates with people who say, oh yeah, I'm kind of flapping out here. I need to align with a team. That's what franchising is all about. So it's kind of a turn on a thought or a phrase for me that helps my candidate identify their need to align with a great team.
What a great title. And it has me smiling over here the whole time. What a fun way to approach it.
Well, like you in this series for your listener, this is our ability to give back to them and enlighten and show them the way, illuminate a path going forward. Let's face it, owning a business is a challenge. It takes commitment. As you say, success requires effort. It requires stick-to-itiveness and resolve and resilience. And the great thing for us, your company, and for me aligned with FranChoice, is that we see the cream of the crop and we know the really good ones, and it's still a tough decision. But man, when they land and they're successful and that smile comes across their face, That's the bee's knees. That's really the funnest part about all of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I second that, Meg. And let's wrap it up. I can chat with you, frankly, for hours. You're a wealth of knowledge and really appreciate you doing this, Meg, and giving to our audience this way and helping them level up. But my final question for you is, why do you love franchising so much?
I am a rule follower. I am a recipe follower. I used the analogy earlier about the German chocolate cake. Do not send me to the grocery store and say, Meg, would you whip up an incredible dinner? Tell me what you want. I can deliver what you want. So that's what brings me to smile is I love the structure of a really solid, great system because I know that my little chick of a candidate who's coming through your process, you say yes and he or she says yes, that's going to bring them an outcome that is potentially a wealth generating game changer. That's just fun.
Process and systems. Yeah, yep. I can totally relate. A little bit of a process and systems nerd on my end. And that's the core of it all. And that's the beauty of it, right? You get everything that you want from a business without creating the system, the process, the brand, the marketing, the infrastructure, the tech, the training, the recruiting strategy, the playbook. It's there for you. And Meg, going back to your original statements about executing on the process and then wrapping up the combo around the beauty in that, really appreciate you jumping on the Level Up show today, Meg. You've most certainly helped me level up, and I know our audience has benefited from it. So thank you again, Meg.
Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this for days. So here we are, and you did a great interview. So thank you for having me on, Nick.
And if somebody would like to reach out to you, Meg, how can they do that?
I know it sounds crazy, but I'm going to give you my business mobile number. Send me a text and say, I heard you on Level Up. 847-302-2601 is my mobile number. Just send me a text. Or you can send me an email, but people will find me. Meg Schmitz.
Yep, Meg Schmitz, you got it. We will most certainly put lots of links in the blog here attached with this show. Really appreciate you watching. Please give this video a like, but more importantly, contribute to this conversation. Let us know some of your thoughts around Meg's focus on people, the upside down pyramid, and everything else that you've heard. And please give us a subscribe. It helps us grow and do just this, give back. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez show.